the day one grain will fall?
I was not actually asked not to go. They said there was no need, and so I didn't go. So I didn't go not because I was brave. I just was ignorant of the danger, and so I took for granted that there was no need, that it was not a serious thing at all.
Who were the people who told you that you did not have to go?
The members of the family there, the boys with and their parents with whom I was staying.
Who was your friend? Did he have to go as well?
No, they didn't have. It's Mr. Yeo, since he has died, you see. That's unfortunate. Otherwise, I might be able to refer him to you. He's just died. And so I didn't go. And thereby saved myself. It seemed that there were quite a number of people who just ignored the order and stayed at home quietly, and there were not enough people to check, and so they saved themselves.
Why didn't the Japanese come to your friend's house?
Well, in those days, you could speak a few words of Japanese at once, and you became great friends with them.
They could speak Japanese?
Yes, of course. The mother was Japanese. Although she married a Chinese here, she still could remember the Japanese language. Suppose you're a conqueror, you're Japanese, you come to Singapore, you conquered Singapore, and you met somebody here, maybe staying here, who could speak Japanese. You would be quite excited, like meeting an old friend, wouldn't you? And you wouldn't think of going to the house to examine and check on the people in the house.
So you mean that the Japanese knew that there was a Japanese staying
at the house? Of course, they knew.
So when did you move back to your house?
Soon after the people, as the people were streaming back, actually, I joined in the crowd with streaming home.
Did they stay there for a day, or would they stay for a few days before they moved back?
I wouldn't know. It depends on the center. The group from Tokro, I think, was my group. They were all going back, and they all came back, and I heard that they all had gone back, so my wife said, let's go back. We have stayed too long in people's house, so not so good, so we went back.
Did anyone of you fear that the Japanese may go to your house after the after that incident, because you were not examined at all?
No, we didn't hear that. Because it was impossible to check, and there was no checking, no registration, and so on, that sort of thing. In fact, I was told the picking out of people was done arbitrarily, just asking what's profession and so on. And then sometimes they don't even ask it. Maybe he doesn't like the face or the fellow's wood. Just like that, then you never see that person again. So many of my friends never came back.
Were any of your relatives being taken away as well?
Yes.
Besides the kind of arbitrary decision, were there any other reasons why your friends or relatives were taken away?
I don't know anything about that. No.
For instance, were any one of them volunteers or involved in it?
No, not that I know of.
Did you expect this kind of actions taken by the Japanese during that time?
No, we never expected. Nobody expected in the least. Everybody thought it was just going for a talk or lecture of the new Asia, Asia being reborn or something. You call prosperity, right? What's that slogan they have?
Co-prosperity.
Asia. Everybody thought it was that, you see.
How did you feel after this incident? Did it have any influence on your attitudes towards the Japanese authorities?
Well, we were scared. We were really scared. And then we were very anxious to hear bits of news here and there. And then we began to hear all sorts of atrocities, real or imaginary or exaggerated. All sorts. And of Siglap Hill being the burial ground of hundreds of people being machine gunned and buried alive, or that kind of thing. And of people who were thought dead managed to crawl out and come back to tell the tales. True or not, we don't know. Never first hand, but rumors, you see. But that scared the life out of us. And from then on, whatever the Japanese said, you bow down as low as possible. And so, for the sake of maybe we're scared for ourselves or for our family.
Did the Japanese do anything else to the Chinese community after that incident?
Not much that I know of, except those affected by the Kempeitai. Then my uncle, he thought it was quite safe, but they began to dig up, and the Japanese who were offended or who were sort of being felt that they were badly treated during the British era by the people, and when they came back, they began to look around. Now is my time to take revenge. So they look around, and my uncle was picked out as one of them. My uncle actually was a government tool, that was all. He was made to auction the government confiscated property, and the confiscated property belonged to the Japanese when the Japanese were taken prisoner at the outbreak of the war. A lot of Japanese property was confiscated, and he had to auction them, and he auctioned them very quickly. He had to do the job as quickly as possible. The British hurried him, and he auctioned them very cheaply. And these Japanese who owned these properties got mad with him. Why should our valuable properties be auctioned so cheaply to some of these Chinese over here? So they came, they mugged him, and then got him to YMCA. And what they did to him? Broke every bone in his finger. Beat his mouth until his jaw broke for talking too much. And broke his forearm all with Indian gloves. Broke them piece by piece and tortured him. Sent him back. Went to hospital, patch up. Call him again and broke some more. Patch him up so many times. Until he begged to die. I dare not see him. Died.
When did he die?
He died. In fact, when things were quite settled down after Japanese occupation, they took a long time to investigate and get all these charges ready. And then when they were sure, they just got him and gave him properly.
Did that during the torture?
The torture, yes. Torture, yes. But it was slow torture. Many people, it occurred to many people, for one reason or another, the Japanese actually did wreak their vengeance. Because they felt that these were the people who were very unfair to them. And so the camp retire. Those charges might justify their actions, you see. But in 99 out of 100 cases, they shouldn't resort to such measures. Horrible. So the people got very, very scared. For the slightest thing, you might be taken in. And the tortures were so refined and horrible. Sometimes refined, but very painful to the victims. See? And they seem to enjoy the sadistic pleasures. YMCA is notorious place. And these people call it Kempira. They're very much dreaded. And just a Gestapo of Germany are dreaded by their own people even. The Kempita here even are dreaded by their own soldiers. And their own military and the Kempita, they have no love lost for each other at all. And the soldiers, even some of the Air Force, Japanese Air Force, that people with whom later, a few years later, I made friends with, university graduates, some of them from Tokyo, Waseda University and so on, young men, very clean living young people. Now they're different types. They're Air Force people, loved young children, educated, decent, like any decent young man in American Air Force or British Air Force. Now they're different. They themselves warn me that don't get into their hands. These are the people you cannot reason with them. They can be murderous. They themselves say so. They come with chocolates for my children, for my grandchildren. They say, no, my children, and then for my wife, and so on. They play the violin, and so on. They want company of families here, and so on. There are quite a number of decent ones. Not all of them are bad. His education tells.
When your uncle was arrested by the Kempeitai, could the family members or the relatives get in touch with him or try to get help for him?
But it's no use. He was sent home for the family to see that he was tortured. He was sent home. We went to see him at home. All bandaged up and so on, he said, they allow you to take him home, yes, you can take him home. All bandaged up nicely.
And when he recovered, they sent for him again?
Yeah, sent for him again.
How many times do you remember?
I did not ask. But from what I gathered, it was a number of times. Until he couldn't stand. And he just wanted to die.
How did he die?
He just died. I don't know. I didn't ask. I was not there. He's my uncle. He just died.
At his house or in the YMCA?
Pardon?
At his house or in the YMCA?
I think he died at the YMCA. And they went to claim his body. I think he died at the YMCA and went to claim his body.
Were any of his family members affected?
Even if they were affected, I don't think they could do anything. Everything was normal, the burial, everything was normal. As if nothing happened. No complaints, nothing. Nobody breathed a word that he was beaten by the Kempeitai. His children were quite young, knew nothing about it. They never told us much. Even about the beating, they did not breathe a word. We found it out from other people.
In the initial period, did the Japanese, do you know whether the Japanese do the same kind of thing for the other communities, like rounding them up or questioning them?
I wouldn't know. What I know is that people of all walks of life and all ethnic groups are scared, were scared. You were really afraid, because for no rhyme or reason, they might be called, taken away.
Mr. Gate, did you, after the Japanese came in, did you go back to teach?
Not immediately. My wife and I, we opened a small coffee shop downstairs. In fact, we should have continued it because it was quite profitable. We sold ice jelly, ice kacang, and coffee shop and so on. Quite profitable. We sold fruit and even we went up to Johor to get some pork, get some pork to bring down here to sell. And we got the living. Then when the education department was started, they began to open up the schools and call back all the teachers. And of course, when they called back the teachers, they wanted us to teach but we couldn't teach in Japanese, of course. Then they had some Japanese teachers come out to take Japanese lessons to teach us Japanese, elementary Japanese, and we attended some Japanese classes at St. Joseph's Institution. So we learned one lesson ahead of the students. But most of the time we quietly taught the students English.
Before you started teaching again, you were doing some kind of business. You were doing business in a coffee shop.
Yes.
How did you set it up?
No, we were staying downstairs, upstairs, and the downstairs was like a void, you see. Last time, those kind of terrace houses, upstairs the living quarters, downstairs empty void, and like garage type. And we just set up some stools and some boards. That's a very, very simple sort of thing, and some stools and tables, wooden tables and stools. There was no license, nothing. And the tap water and some basins at the back, and that was all, and the kettle and some stoves, charcoal stoves to boil the water with.
Where did you get your supplies, such as the coffee powder, sugar, and the charcoal, all that?
Oh yes, some other these things came in, although they were quite expensive, but we could buy them in town, in Arab Street and all those places. You leave it to the Chinese. After some time, they know how to get these things in. Tea, Chinese tea, or you do get these things. Where they come from, we don't know. But we have the money, you pay. You pay so much, you... And flour, we have all these.
By that time, you were all using Japanese currency?
Yes. And they were all banana money. It became worse and worse. At first it was all right, but later it became worse and worse.
How did
you
get
at that time, in the early days, no, not yet, no. In the early days, I don't think we used Japanese money yet. It was later. It was not so early, not yet. I don't think so. In the early days, not yet. But it was later that we used the Japanese money. I don't know when we actually changed to Japanese money.
Who were your customers mainly?
Just ordinary people, workers and so on, ordinary people. Just same price, 2 cents a cup, 3 cents with milk, 5 cents, and that kind of thing.
You mentioned that you went to Johor for meat also. How did you travel up there? Could you travel without getting any passes from the Japanese?
Oh yes, you could go in and out. We go in and I had I had what called an armband in Japanese century that allows to pass. That's why you must have armband. Don't want to go with armband, you right? Armband, some member of something, something, you know, armband.
How did you get your armband?
Huh? Go to the, you want an armband to show that you are working for the city government or something. Somebody want to say that you are a teacher or something of the sort. You can go to the Tokubetsu-si or this city, you call it city government, special city government that is at the Padang City Council Hall, that you can get a special pass.
But at that time you were not teaching yet.
Not yet, at that time not yet.
So how did you get your pass?
Huh? Well, I really can't remember, you know. I really can't remember. I was not teaching, but they already started to give away these things for identification of people. Already, I think they gave this for identification of people before they started organization. So it was a few months before the schools actually started, and we had to. I was given that earlier because I was given the authority to go and collect the chairs and tables back from the kampongs. You know, the Malays had a field day. They came and took all the chairs and tables of the schools to their homes, meeting. So the school, our school, which is the Presbyterian and Ho Chang Girls School, we had most of our chairs and tables taken away, were emptied of the furniture, and then we went to the kampongs and so on and found them there in the coffee shops, in their stalls, in their homes, in their bedrooms. And so we collected them and we couldn't get them back until I got fed up. I brought a soldier friend. I said, you see, this Hei Tai San, this soldier says, you people must return. If you don't return, your head will be on the bridge. And that that was a bluff. That was a bluff, a threat, empty threat, but that. He smiled. He said, "Why do you say like that?" The soldier said, "Hey, no good." I said, "No, he's joking." And some of them volunteered to carry them back. So quite a lot came back, but a lot became firewood. So silly. They were short of firewood and they went to burn good furniture. It was so lazy to carry them back that they used them as firewood.
So during the time when you were asked to help to collect this furniture back, you were still operating your coffee shop business?
Yes, it was some time. And my wife ran it.
Who was the person who authorized you to go around to collect the tables and chairs?
I was made temporary principal with that band. With that band, you see.
How did you know about that right at the beginning?
Huh? Pardon?
Were you approached by someone to go and collect, or how did you know about it initially?
No, you were asked to report.
Who asked you to report?
I think somebody from ministry. Just sort of get right to us. Somebody, the ministry, there is a director that asked us to report. And then we went there and we learned to sing some Japanese songs also. And Shinozaki was ahead. Shinozaki could speak English. I think it was from his office that issued, calling most senior teachers. And I was the most senior teacher there, after the principal was. It was I,
So you received the letter and you went to Senozaki's office.
Yeah, and we sang songs and so on and so forth. And then we are all later issued with the bomb bands, with the chop. And so we went around to start organizing.
So your first job was to collect furniture. When you went to Senozaki's office, who else were there with you? How many of them?
I have no idea. You also, I mean, so happy to get things started again, and it was so friendly that we felt quite natural, except for the language, and that we felt very well after all. We are all Asians. What difference does it make? As long as you can educate the children and get the children back to school. As the schools get started, the children are off the streets. And the schools will be anyway in our hands.
Was Senozaki the only Japanese there on that day when you met in his office?
I think there was a few others, heads of others, the other departments. It was well there were the other departments. It's sort of municipality, you know, all the departments all there. All the public services, all the departments, all that. He was in charge of education.
Was he the one chairing that meeting?
Obviously he was. He was obviously there, and we sang some of the naval song hits, inspiring the Navy to fight on. Obviously they were having a difficult time with the American Navy.
Were you taught to sing those songs at that moment?
Yes, at that moment the Japanese don't believe in dilly-dallying. Yes, you want to do a thing, do it now. Try it. So they taught us there and then.
Did Senozaki give any speech?
I don't remember. He's a man of very few words. He just thinks more than he speaks. He's a man of action, not a man of words.
Do you remember what were the instructions that were given out to all of you that day?
I don't quite remember. I suppose he trusts us. He believes that we knew what the education, Singapore Education Department would do. In fact, he was just only a head. He just gave the green signal, and the Ministry of Education just went ahead. And the only thing was for the Japanese tutors to organize Japanese classes to the senior teachers, and the senior teachers see how the Japanese language could be spread among the teachers and from the teachers down to the pupils. That was all that, and it should be done as quickly as possible.
What was your very first impression of Senozaki during that first meeting?
Well, we were not afraid of him like with the other Japanese. I mean, with the other Japanese, we felt that we were facing people who were inscrutable and rather, you know, somebody quite fearsome. I mean, you find them short usually, with their swords that are so long and sharp. Yeah, and the memory of the heads on the bridge, and that kind of thing, and the things that you hear about them, make you really afraid of them.